I don't know this for sure, but I feel the moment I'm feeling right now, the emotions I'm feeling right now are similar to that of a parent that gets in the car for the first time with their teenage learner's permit person, because we're on the bubble today. We're letting Montana Samuels on, Mike Bonner, and we even have a special guest here, Amy Chivaroli. Montana's driving the car today, and I don't know where we're going. We didn't put much planning into this, and we're just going to see where Montana takes us, and Amy and I are just passengers for this podcast.
Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just here for the ride.
You could see as we were getting ready for this, Montana was just had a little excitement about him, and he couldn't even put thoughts, complete sentences together. They were just fragments combined together because of his excitement. So we're here to talk music.
Yeah, we're talking. There were some. I brought this up off mic, but there were some early conversations Mike and I had when we were doing a couple sports podcasts in a row, where we were like, "Well, we can't. This isn't a sports podcast per se. Like, we cannot be too analytical. We don't want to talk about the X's and O's." And on today's music podcast, I think Mike has just thrown those rules out the window, and we're going to get kind of analytical about this.
Just sit in the back seat. Don't know.
So
sit in the back seat of like the old school van with no windows, you know, where people like lived in the back of the van and just you're just driving along, like the Ninja Turtle van.
I mean, this is certainly going off the road, but I don't know if it's me that's taking it there.
Living by a van down by the river, you know, just a passenger. I don't know where we're going. We're just driving us along.
That was really weird.
You're not taking us hostage. We went in the van.
I mean, the picture you painted.
Willingly.
You painted a weird picture.
No, I'm just seeing those old vans, like an Archer, you know what I mean? Where the guy has his own.
I understand the van you're talking. Is this the van? What are we talking about?
What was Mr. T? What was he on?
A-Team.
The A-Team vans. That's what I'm picturing the car that you're driving us in is the A-Team van.
It's the most disrespectful thing anyone's ever said to me.
Some people would say that's very respectful. That's a compliment some people would say.
All right, I'm going to get this ship righted here. So I think a good...
Van, not ship. We're in a van, remember? Okay. Down by the river.
Oh, my God. All right. So I think a good place to start. It's been an interesting 2 weeks, I'll say, in music. It's really been an interesting year. But for the purpose of this podcast and not to glaze too many eyes over, we'll narrow it to the last couple of weeks. A good jumping off point would be Kendrick's Pulitzer Prize win for his album Damn. We talked about the album Damn on our Grammy podcast, but Kendrick is now the first non-jazz or classical performer to win a Pulitzer for music, which is pretty, I mean, if you look at the mindset still that people have towards hip hop that aren't involved in either the culture directly or the music world, they don't realize quite how like revolutionary the sounds are and like what people, the risk people take in production and things like that. So I thought a good place to start would be to give a nod to Kendrick, probably the most important artist of this generation, I would say. I'd like to hear your opinion on that statement, Mike.
I think the first thing that I thought of, and this was echoed by my music go-to person, and she agreed when I said, he can get a Pulitzer, but he can't get a Grammy.
For best out, yeah.
That was the thing that kind of popped out to me. I think it is... I don't want to make it too crazy of a thing that, you know, I think he deserves it. I think that it was nice on the... or admirable by the Pulitzer committee or board or whatever to acknowledge his art and his work, and through hip hop, that's, you know, it's kind of like an artist, whether it's watercolors or oil based or whatever, his mean of painting is hip hop. I think a lot of people are recognizing that, but at the end of the day, it's much like we say, we kind of ripped the Grammys and said, you know, it's an award, and awards are awards. I also kind of go back to the Bill Russell sentiment of people pick awards, and you can't argue with championships. You know, he won it, right? And there's no arguing he won those. Awards are always, they're opinionated. So just like people are saying he deserves this, some people are going to say, no, he doesn't deserve it because hip-hop isn't. So I think it's a good moment to just sit back, appreciate, you know, his voice, his artistry, And some people will like that, some people won't. Just like some people continue to say the Washington Post is fake news and they don't, and they won awards too. So you're never going to say, oh, this is Kendrick's time where, you know, hip hop has been solidified in a thing. And well, I mean, the New York Times and Washington Post won Pulitzers too, and people don't think that they're real either, or that they're real journalism. So you're never going to win everything. You're never going to silence everyone, and everyone's not going to be happy. But it certainly is a step that you can appreciate someone's artistic ability.
Yeah. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I'm while we're talking about the Pulitzer, I did want to give a shout out to the Ryan Kelly, the staff photographer in Charlottesville, who won the Pulitzer for the photos he took of the car crashing through the crowd in Charlottesville. That was pretty. As a photographer, that's sort of a shot that you certainly never want to see in person. But glad he was there to capture that moment. It's a special shout out to you, man. Good coverage. But so this sort of transition, I wanted to start
because you're a photographer.
Well, I mean, I think
I was just curious. A lot of people won Pulitzer, so I was just curious as to why you picked.
A lot of people. I just wanted to. Yeah, I mean, I thought that one was. I always look at the photos. So photos to me, this is. We are already so far off track. Jesus.
I was just curious as to why.
No. So that one in particular, I think photos to me sort of are an articulation of what the purest parts of journalism are, in my opinion, because you are just, you're there. It's not about like curating these interviews and like writing a narrative. It's about, I was in the moment, I captured it, and I let people. Photos are like the purest form of journalism because it's just someone who was there who is now sharing a moment, whether that be good or bad or tragic. So to me, the photos always stand out the clearest because you can you just see it right on the awards page. It's just like, wow, yeah, that's a Pulitzer photo. Like, I agree.
I think the interesting thing from this, and I think it wraps up into what one of our former podcasts, or older podcasts, I don't know, one of the other podcasts we've done, in regards when we had the reporter from the Washington Post on, speaking about the Parkland students in social media, and some of them are getting more retweets or more recognition than others, but there are some students in there that share the same beliefs and are doing the same things. And I think right here, as you pointed out, the photographer from Charlottesville, well, I don't know this for certain, and we can even go differently. We'll say, you know, Washington Post and Roy Moore, or New York Times and the Russia scandal. There are more outlets reporting on that,
Sure.
And this is maybe where the retweet you just recently, you know, tweeted out about, it shouldn't be forgotten that, you know, while these people are recognized, it doesn't lesser the people who are also doing it. It's just their, you know, voice is the loudest. Their outlet is, they have the most Twitter followers, so to speak.
Sure.
Literally and figuratively.
Especially in the case of like New York Times, Washington Post, for sure.
But it doesn't mean that they're the only ones either A, rapping about it, reporting on it, taking those photos.
Right.
It's just, yeah. And I think that's where the award thing, to get back to my original point, was the award's really nice, but it only focuses on a certain group of people or a certain person or outlet or wherever, where usually in these circumstances, there are more people doing the same type of things. Just this rapper's rapping about the same things that Kendrick is. It's just that he's kind of in the spotlight now.
At the end of the day, it's still relative because it's still a group of people's opinion about who did the best job over the year. So, yeah, totally agree. But, so I wanted to start with Kendrick because I think Kendrick is going to be the only male artist we're going to be talking about today, which is why we brought Amy in, because Amy recently saw Julian Baker at the Columbus Theater in Providence, right in my neck of the woods. And I wanted to start there because Julian Baker is sort of, there's a moment happening within the Indian punk and those adjacent spaces in guitar-led music, I guess, is like a good way to put it. Because what's been going on recently with like indie rock, like rock music as a coverall, is that it's really boring. Like, the music that's been coming out has not been critically praised. It's just been bad. And most of that, up until very recently, has been put out by men. Now we're seeing this moment where a lot of these women-fronted bands, like, or artists like Julian Baker, like Phoebe Bridgers, like Diet Sig, are coming into this moment. And it's really powerful for not only the women who have occupied those spaces, but just in general, to see them accepted by this community of music that up until very recently had sort of dismissed them as like girl bands, right? Mm-hmm. And you had an Instagram post that I thought was like sort of a powerful articulation of that, where it spoke about like you've been feeling a lot of anxiety recently, and this sort of, can you articulate what that moment was and what artists like Julian Baker have sort of meant in like dealing with these sorts of issues?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like there has been a lot going on lately, and I know usually helping to deal with that is music, obviously, and live music especially.
Right.
I feel like every so often I just need to be at a show just to kind of like, I don't know, there's kind of like a release that's involved in it.
Yeah.
Just being around a certain group of people and hearing the music live. And I didn't think I was going to be able to get to this show because I had worked late on Sunday. And
right.
Then I had to drive to Providence and it was pouring rain. And then I had to park a few blocks away from Columbus Theater. So then I was literally running from my car in the rain to the venue and finally got there. I think I maybe missed 15 minutes of her set, but I felt like she still played a lot of songs. And the funny thing about that is somebody actually ended up getting kicked out of her show.
Really?
Yeah. So I couldn't really see what was going on. I was kind of sitting toward the back. And there were these people in the back that were being super loud.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously anybody can hear that because Julian, like all of her songs are fairly quiet
yeah.
and low key. It's
if you're not familiar with Julian Baker, I think one of her lyrics, I'm paraphrasing, is she wishes she could write songs about things other than death.
Yeah.
So if you can envision the type of music that goes along with songs about death, it's very soft, acoustic often. You can hear what she said.
Yeah, so we weren't having a mosh pit in the front or anything
right.
like that. So you could tell that people were kind of screaming in the back and there was a lot going on. And then the security got involved, and I think people ended up being taken out. But her reaction to it was just really funny. I mean, obviously, she was very graceful about it and finished
right.
her song, and it was amazing. Then she was like, is there fighting going on? There will be no fighting at my show. And she's just, I don't know, she's super funny, even though all her songs are really sad.
Yeah. Well, and that's something both you and I have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
A good number of times with artists like Julian Baker, like Phoebe Bridgers. The music is very much in the vein of like an Elliott Smith, where it's more intimate, it's more personal. You're sharing experiences that, the artist rather is sharing experiences that they assume are going to be shared and relatable. And I think, so it's worth noting, though this moment is happening and it's gaining more notoriety, there have been female-led, women-led bands in the past that have done this. It's just, I think the moment right now is unique that they're gaining some notoriety. So, I think, like, did you grow up at, like, going to shows or, like, in indie scenes, like emo scenes and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, it was
yeah.
totally emo.
So,
I think you know that.
Because I'm interested, so, like, Brand New just put out that new album, right? And then it came out the week following that Jesse Lacey had these problematic things where he essentially, I wrote this down, Jesse Lacey was accused of like sexual harassment, manipulative behavior, and child grooming of like young fans, essentially. And I think people have talked a lot about how those scenes, especially for younger women, are difficult to be a part of, despite the fact that you want, it's like relatable music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that there's been a change in sort of the more like intimate indie punk scenes where women are becoming a voice that's not only taken more seriously but accepted more in these spaces?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in a lot of spaces, like women's voices are becoming stronger and people
right.
are starting to kind of hear them rather than, you know, just sort of notice them. Like
right.
I feel like people are kind of paying attention a little more.
Yeah. And what so let's say you, now at like a Julian Baker, so like obviously at a Julian Baker show, this is a specific audience that is willing to sort of open up to a artist who's sharing these sort of intimate moments. But over the past couple of months or like even year, have you been to shows that are maybe more traditionally like in the past would have been like a male-centric crowd and noticed a difference from like when you were younger going to emo shows or something like that?
Like a difference in the crowd, you mean?
Like in how, like, are there more female faces? Are there more, are women more accepted? And because, so a lot of these spaces, it, at least coming up for me and listening to other people who came up through these scenes, it seems as if maybe like the, like the opinions of women and also like women at the shows, though there were, like you could hear in the artist's music, it was still a bit like misogynistic. Like, have you noticed a difference in the more recent incarnations of punk and indie music that it's changing a little bit? Do you still think it's there?
I don't know. I guess it's hard to tell. I mean, I guess in terms of, I don't know, like, I guess for me, like, going to shows, like, I never really felt uncomfortable.
Okay.
In, like, certain spaces. I mean, I guess as I kind of got older, like, I was kind of more comfortable going to shows by myself versus
sure.
bringing a friend or whatever. I've definitely had some, like, not great experiences
right.
at shows just as a young woman. But yeah, I mean, I think that I know, I mean, there's probably more, you know, I'm sure there's more women like feeling
yeah.
comfortable in that space. And I just kind of reminded me of, so I've been listening to this podcast Invisibilia that
mm-hmm.
NPR does. That's really awesome. And they just recently did one about like call out culture,
mm-hmm.
In the hardcore scene and
yeah.
like punk scene and kind of what that's like. So I feel like that's more of that, coming out in certain
right.
spaces, which I think is good in some
yeah.
cases, but
I think it's nice to see people because as a musician, you're sort of, placed in this position of power by the people who listen to your music. And it's refreshing in a way to see at least in certain genres, those people being held accountable for some of the things that they're doing that are abusing that power. Which is not necessarily true in all genres right now, with people like XXXTentacion or the artist 6ix9ine and hip hop having either pled or been charged with some problematic, to say the least, things toward women. But I thought, so that was a unique, with your experience going to the show, I thought it was cool to jump off into that. We're having this really powerful moment in indie and punk spaces, but we're also having this powerful moment in hip hop for women with Cardi B's latest album coming out. And I think, I mean, Mike knows how much I love Cardi B. I think I've voiced it multiple times on this podcast.
You do, yes.
But so, Cardi B's album came out last week. It debuted at number one this week on Billboard, the top 200. But I think the most important thing, we can talk, we're not going to do the more analytical side, so I won't delve into why Cardi B is the greatest human being that's ever walked the face of the earth and why it was really nice of Jimmy Fallon to let Cardi B co-host or it was really nice of Cardi B rather to let Jimmy Fallon co-host Jimmy Fallon's show the other night.
Jimmy Fallon's show. It's the Tonight Show. That's a huge,
well, that's Cardi
it's
B's show now.
Deal. Well, but it would still be the Tonight Show
with Cardi B.
Right. Yeah. I mean, whether it was Carson, Leno or
right,
Fallon,
yeah,
or
it was
Cardi B.
So essentially, I think, obviously, Cardi B's moment is really cool, especially in hip-hop, but I think the most important moment right now is seeing what happens as other female artists drop new music, because there's been a theme in hip-hop throughout the years of it that there can only be, like, one at a time. Like, if Missy's out right now and she's doing really well, then Remy or like Nicki or someone else has to like wait a little bit. And now it seems as if because people are having these conversations about it, Cardi's album just dropped. Nicki's about to drop an album. It seems she put out two singles last week as well. People seem to be more receptive of the notion that there can be two female artists coexisting at the same time in inclusion of the litany of underground female artists that are coming up right now, like Princess Nokia, etc. So, yeah, I just thought that was kind of a...
Well, I think the telling thing will be longevity. You know, it is, you're right, there's Nicki and Cardi B right now, and they seem, but to me, Cardi B is in the prime, and Nicki Minaj is, I don't know if she's still in her prime. You know, I think maybe a few albums ago she was there. I think we've seen this in the past where you have Eve or Missy Elliott or Lil' Kim, and they've always been some intertwining, but I think you're right where it almost seems like the torch gets passed. So I'm more interested to see, is Cardi B and Nicki Minaj going to, you know, continue a rap career, or is this more Nicki Minaj handing the torch off to Cardi B?
Yeah. Well, and see, I think, so there's a couple of
like we've seen in the past. I feel like right. That's kind of how it goes, is where.
Well, and there's layers to that too, right? So hip hop by nature is competitive. So it seems like you can't really, like it's different. If there's not that many female artists and it's a competitive thing by nature, it almost breeds like, well, there's only two of you. Like there's gotta be like a little bit of beef. Whereas like a Jay-Z can come out with 444 outside of his prime, definitely, and still be received well without having to deal with any of the, that type of thing.
I agree. I wonder if that's a stereotype within the hip hop community where I understand there are rivalries,
right?
But at the same time, Cardi B and Nicki Minaj are two of the biggest stars in hip hop.
They also have a little bit of beef.
They do. Already. They do. But I wonder how much of that is just industry created because at some point, and I understand, you know, Drake has had some butt rivalries and such. But when you look at the major players in hip hop right now, I mean, as you mentioned, like, you know, Jay-Z can release an album and, you know, whatever.
Yes.
Drake does his own thing, you know, stays in his lane recently. Right. Eminem, kind of the same thing. When you look at these big named, especially established.
Right.
That was, I think, the point. Nicki, for me, is established. She doesn't need to, have a rival. You know, she's...
Right.
So I wonder, the fact that we've been bringing it up seems to me that, like, it's kind of industry created where no one's thinking, like, oh man, Drake just released an album. What is so and so going to say about it? It doesn't matter.
Well,
it just goes out.
But that comes with like a lot of that comes from like radio, right, or sales. So it was in country a couple of years ago. There was a statement made, and I can't remember the source of this quote, but there was essentially a statement made that was, men are the lettuce and women are the tomatoes in a salad, and you can't have too many tomatoes. And that's like speaking in radio terms, and that's very much the same thing in hip hop, where like you only get so many spins an hour. DJs specifically, especially when you look in the past iterations of it, have only felt comfortable playing one female artist an hour. So like if Cardi's real, I keep wanting to say like real hot to deem like how popular she is, but that's not the word choice that's very appropriate for this podcast. So if Cardi is very popular and garnering a lot of attention, she will play. But if Nicki releases a song and she's still not as popular as Cardi, a DJ will not feel comfortable playing both of them at the same time. So only one of them gets the same push that like, say like a 6ix9ine or an XXXTentacion or Kendrick will get, even though the two previous artists are like much more problematic and things like that.
As we move to mainstream, I wonder how Amy feels, and because I don't think it's a hip hop thing.
No, it's very, like I said,
because when you look at, you
country,
have two of the, but yeah, two of the biggest stars in the world, musicians in the world, Katy Perry and Taylor Swift.
Sure.
There's always this, oh, they don't like each other and there's this beef, and it's, I don't really even know. But who cares? You know, I just don't know why. You know, even you look back in my childhood, Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears. Like, there always has to be this dynamic rivalry rather than just, you know, Eminem and Jay-Z. I saw them both in concert. The same, you know, they're in harmony. They're the two biggest rappers in that time, and they were fine. And I'm just wondering why in female recording artists there always has to be this back and forth. It seems, at least it appears that way.
I, yeah, I, Not to cut you off, because I do want to hear your opinion, but that's true. I mean, you mentioned Jay-Z and Eminem. They both certainly had beefs in their career. I mean, Jay-Z and Nas was like a huge moment in hip-hop, and those were the two biggest artists at the time as well.
No, I'm not, I 100% agree with that, that there are beefs, but...
Why female musicians are often pitted against each other by outside voices?
Yes.
Okay.
Because in that sense, and I get that, well, I don't even know, because I don't, but supposedly there is some, you know, beef, and with Taylor Swift's video, she like put stuff about Katy Perry subliminally or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but...
Shout out to female, or just shout out to pop radio in general. Just shout out to pop radio. What a beautiful, welcoming space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious how, like, am I seeing things, or do you see it as well, or how?
How do I say it? Just like this dynamic that we're talking about. I mean, it's just stupid. I mean, we should. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the songs that, you know, women make, like, that should be played on the radio the same amount as, you know, songs that are by men. It's just kind of stupid that, you know, the industry, you know, I don't even, you know, whether this is true or not, the industry feels that there needs to be some kind of tension created between female artists or even male artists just to make, you know, I don't know, something more interesting, or just to... You know, I don't know what it is, but I think it's silly.
Yeah, I think so too. And hopefully, I think that's changing a bit. That at least seems at the present how people are reacting, and specifically in regards to Nicki and Cardi, because they're two love figures within that genre specifically. But I think that is sort of the beautiful thing about the scene we were talking about earlier that Julian Baker occupies, because there is... I mean, there's a lot of collaboration going on in that scene. And it just seems, rather than something like hardcore or punk, where it's sort of this difficult thing to breach if you're like an outside voice, that's very welcoming and very open. So it is nice to see that change in music as a whole, almost, with rap and with indie and those punk spaces. It is nice to see them become more welcoming and more unified, if you will, especially for the people inside of them. So, yeah.
And I mean, I guess in like the type of spaces that like Julian Baker, revolves in, mm-hmm. I mean, just like from what I can see, like those seem to be like more supportive in terms of like, I've seen like artists supporting other artists, or even on Twitter, right. It's like I see, you know, that kind of support.
Right. And it's not to pit one genre. I want to be very clear. We're not trying to like pit one genre against each other.
Oh yeah,
to like
no.
Uphold. It's just there are certain nuances that go into hip hop and these other spaces where like the type of beefs we're talking about in hip hop is part of the culture, and it's part of what makes it really fun. I think more so what we're trying to articulate is it shouldn't impact. Katy Perry and Taylor Swift both play on the radio despite the fact they don't like each other. Historically, Nicki and Remy Ma specifically, who most recently had beef, will not play on the radio within the same hour if they have beef with each other, because you have to pick a side. That's the problem that comes with. And like I said, it seems like maybe that's changing. I think when Nicki drops, Cardi B is a popular enough artist to maintain her radio spins and everything like that. And I don't think it'll affect, but it is sort of nice to finally have this conversation in the forefront in more than just rooms like this, where it's like two people's eyes glazing over listening to this white guy talk about rap music. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just riding along. Yeah. I went, there was a solid portion there where it was great just to sit back and listen, because I had not heard of any of the people you guys were discussing.
So
I don't listen to indie punk or
right.
any of that. So it was interesting to hear different, which is what the bubble's all about, is taking people out of their
their
comfort zone and learning new things.
Yeah. I don't even, I
Well, I know you have more written on your.
I can't talk. We've gone deep. We'll save Beyonce for now. If you haven't seen Beyonce's Coachella performance, go watch it. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but we don't need to delve into that today.
I haven't seen. I tweeted about it
this weekend. If you guys want to see it, you can go to my timeline and see my Beyonce opinion. I just stop going to Coachella, guys. That's all. Just stop. Stop.
What if you want to see Beyonce?
You can see Beyonce another time, another
place.
Don't
make me get. Yeah, going to Coachella.
Gotta open it up. You can't dangle it out there. We can even just step in, toe in the water. What?
Let me pull up my notes. So Beyonce's performance was very much like a celebration of Southern Black culture, right? She had the backing marching band in the historical Black college and university sort of vein, where it was very much dance centric, very much drum. Like it was just, if you went to Georgia Southern and Grambling and you were waiting for the halftime show, it was very much that. It was this big celebration of Blackness, basically. And it was great. She brought out Solange, she brought out Jay-Z, she brought out Destiny's Child, which seemed to get the biggest crowd reaction. But it just, so she, at a moment in the performance, she says, thank you for having me as the first female Black performer. And then she said, ain't that a, I don't know. Are we going to bleep a word for the first time in the Bubble
saying.
Podcast history? Yeah. So, and it just seems to me like that. I think Coachella has this reality where it is a place for wealthy, white, coastal, sorority, fraternity, Instagram influencer types to go and dress up in Indian headdresses and take a lot of club drugs and just sort of be there with these often Black performers as accent pieces to their party. That performance should not be an accent piece. And it becomes especially questionable to me when the people who that performance was for, the people who are attending these HBCUs and the people who are celebrating Beyonce for a person that is a powerful Black female voice in America, often can't even afford to go to the show because the tickets are like, I don't even know what the ticket price, I stopped looking like 5 years ago at what the ticket prices are.
No, I think that doesn't have to do with Beyonce's performance or anything like that. I think it's something, as you talked about it, it's a price point thing, and it's something that hip hop has dealt with for a long time in terms of, I know in the 90s and the 2000s, you look specifically in the 90s and 2000s before, the G-Eazys and the Macklemores. And,
right,
you know,
these like massive white.
Right. You have
post-Eminem.
You have people where it was predominantly a Black industry, but all the record sales were to white middle schoolers. I mean, for lack of a better term. And I know even when you, and it doesn't even have to do with hip-hop. I know one of my best friends, she was talking about, you know, she grew up in New York City, and I was talking about, you know, oh, have you like, you know, heard about Hamilton? Have you like read this and that, blah, blah, blah. And she was just like, no, I don't want to, because my family who lives in the Bronx can't afford to go. So yes, it's this great immigrant story of blah, blah, blah. And then they're going to charge $300 a ticket.
Right.
Who's going to these things? You know, it's while she appreciates the voice and the idea behind it, I mean Beyonce knows what Coachella is, and she's a great representative for a lot of people, but how do you reach out to how do you balance the socioeconomic aspect
well
it?
And this is
because
more,
her voice, you saw it, like, in there's a powerful thing on YouTube where you can everyone can share it,
you can,
but at the same
moments,
time as Amy expressed earlier, seeing live music, it's a different thing just watching on YouTube. And we, as three white people here, we couldn't afford to go to Coachella. So it's beyond that. The prices, Jay-Z and Beyonce are coming to Foxborough for at least one show. I looked because I was a fan of both, and
right.
I can't, like,
right.
I couldn't go. So it's certainly a thing where I think regardless of who the performance was for or who, you know, whatever matters, the price point is a huge thing in music.
Yeah. It just struck me as kind of off. Like, I don't even know how you would fix it because I'm not one to tell. Like, that paycheck, I know what that paycheck looks like that Beyonce got from performing at Coachella. I'm not telling you not to perform there. It's just, I wish there was a way in which these music industry spaces could be more welcoming to the people who the music is influencing rather than the people who influence the ticket sales for Coachella, right? Whereas, like, it's just really tough to see this continuous stream of white social media influencers posting photos throughout the weekend at Coachella of, like, having the time of my life. And it's just like, dude, you're going to see the Chainsmokers. Like, just go to a Chainsmokers concert. Like, you don't have to.
Not to get too, you know, lofty, but it's an interesting aspect of maybe that's why Beyonce did it. You know, it's a freedom of speech type of thing where she's spreading her speech to maybe people who, you know, as you said, if it is, in fact, because I did not see the video. I don't know who was at Coachella.
Right.
I know I've heard of it, but I don't, you know. But yeah, if it's primarily all affluent white people, that's an interesting message that she sends to those people that they may not have otherwise heard in a different realm.
Yeah.
And I think that's how that's the thing about music is you can spread messages or feelings or whatever through different means. It's a form of art, just like just like anything else.
Yeah. We're not calling out, please, Beyonce fans, if you come across this podcast on an off chance, do not spam our Twitters. We are not trying to slander Beyonce.
Are you sure you want to say that? I mean, that could be the bubble's big.
No. That's not
all. All publicity is good publicity. Montana gets
spam Mike Bonner. Montana
Samuels gets
not ready for those.
Stuck in the beehive.
I am not. I do not want those problems.
And then we just get rid of Montana, and it's the Amy and Mike show.
I mean, it might be the Amy and Mike. After this rambling, it may be the Amy and Mike show, regardless.
AM. I'm just trying to come up with cool names already. I'm sure Amy would enjoy going to a Acushnet Creamery with Mac and just chilling.
Yeah, I was kind of mad that you guys didn't invite
me.
I should have been a guest on that show.
You
like,
should have been. Yeah, that's
come
true.
On.
She's probably like, I'm talking about indie punk music with this.
Yeah, I got to come talk about. I go to a Julian Baker show and I got to listen crazy to Montana person. Talk about music for 35 minutes. What did I get myself into?
Meanwhile, they're going out for ice cream with a dog and just chilling.
You want to go get ice cream after this?
I think it was, we said you can never have enough ice cream.
Yeah.
I don't know if it came across this new microphone we have in the studio here, but my stomach has been like grumbling throughout.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
So if you really listen closely, fans of the pod, you might be able to hear. So what is that noise? I'm really
hungry,
which didn't happen. Like, I came in fine, and then half hour later, apparently I'm famished.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go get lunch. Amy, once again, thank you so much for joining us. Mike, Amy, thank you for listening to me ramble on about nothing. This is going to be our least viewed episode of The Bubble, almost certainly.
What was I saying? That's not right. Come on, come to The Bubble, where we'll then make fun of how your podcast you joined us, Amy, is going to be the least listened to.
Well,
just not
Amy,
a very good host.
I hope you join us.
If there's ice cream involved, then probably.
Well,
yes.
Yeah. All right, anyone who comes on The Bubble gets ice cream. New rule, Mike's dollar. All right, this has been The Bubble. Thanks for listening to me ramble about music. We hope you'll have us back.
I'm glad you didn't. I thought you were going to toss it to me, and again, I had no idea what the sign-off was, so thank you for not.
I saved you.